This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Pedlin Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. It is January 17th, 2018. Welcome to Bicycle Talk, this week with my co-host, the lovely Fran Storch.
Hi.
A show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show, please call or text right now at 860-486-9487, or you can email me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can also visit Bicycle Talk on Facebook. If you'd like to listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk, you can listen on whus.org or on iTunes. And if you'd like to contribute information or content to the show or be a guest, please contact me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. Enough of the business. On to Ron's rant of the week. So this kind ran across my desk, and I was looking at it and going, wow, I never really thought about it this way. But, you know, there's a comment here. It was through one of my business pages on LinkedIn. And I have this thing where I'm tied into the bicycle industry through LinkedIn. And there was a comment about the dirty business of carbon fiber. Okay, so I'm going to rant on this just a little bit because I do have a special guest coming on today, and we're going to be talking about a few things, bicycles actually that are manufactured here in the United States. We'll get into that in a moment. But anyway, there's a lot of carbon bicycles that are made in this world are made over in Asia. They're made in various countries over there, and we do produce carbon fiber bicycles here in the United States too. But, of course, it is a little bit more expensive process here because we have more environmental concerns and more ways of actually protecting ourselves against the environmental concerns that go along with working with fibers like this. So when it comes to the world's worst polluters, the bicycle industry is hardly the biggest offender. Bikes and other sporting goods made out of carbon fiber represent a sliver of total carbon demand. According to the data from the Composites Forecasts and Consulting, only 11% of carbon fiber goes into consumer products. The rest goes into making automobiles, pressure vehicles, airplanes, and other industrial uses. So, what does this mean to you? Well, if you go to your local bike shop and you're buying a carbon fiber bicycle, there is a solid chance that it probably came out of Asia, and it probably came from some pretty, let's say, not so wonderful places that are not paying as strict attention as they should be as far as the environmental impact goes. So River City Bicycles in Portland, Oregon, questions about the carbon footprints and supply chains don't come up at all, says owner Dave Gutler. The issue has been raised on a minor level from the industry, but consumers aren't putting pressure on the industry, he says. I think most people, when they get into bikes and how they're made, would have a hard time pointing fingers. So, yeah, there's definitely carbon, lots of carbon fiber out in the industry. Those of us who ride our bikes a lot, we probably have at least one carbon bicycle in our fleet. Hopefully we have a fleet because fleets are fun. But if not, then you might ride on a traditional steel bicycle, which is kind of a cool thing too. Yes, steel is still around. Steel is still a very viable material. Steel still rides really well. So my rant of the week is checking into and thinking about the next time you're buying a bike as to whether you want it to be a carbon fiber bicycle and where it came from and what the origins of that were and what kind of precautions they're using to be protective of both the environment and also of the people that are actually handling the fabrics. Moving from this, if you would like to discuss this also, there's a discussion on my Facebook page, and it is, how do you feel about the environmental concerns with your carbon fiber bike? So please feel free to check my Facebook page at Bicycle Talk and have some comments. I'd love to hear from you. On a positive side, okay, this is the fun one. Jan Fran's going to love this. The positive side is New Jersey. Okay. So Fran is a Jersey girl, and she is always touting the lovely things about New Jersey, and New Jersey this and New Jersey that. And that's, you know, you're part of where you grow up in that state, and, you know, you become very partial to it. So why am I noting New Jersey on the positive side? Well, here's the good reason why. Because Monday, January 15th, 2018, was an important day for bike riders and pedestrians in the state of New Jersey. On that day, outgoing Governor Chris Christie signed into law a law which requires the state's driver education course, the driver education manual, and the driver's license written exam to include bike rider and pedestrian safety information. Yay! Okay, so this was put out by New Jersey, the New Jersey Bike Walk Coalition, and they pushed this through, and they got it to happen. So talk to your local bike walk coalitions and see if you can get this to happen in your state, or check and see if it has happened in your state. But anyway, they led the charge in the state getting the historic bill passed with support from the Bicycle Coalition of Greater Philadelphia, the League of American Bicyclists, and the Tri-State Transportation Campaign. Now that this bill is passed, we have big plans for educating driver's education and drivers, instructors, and raising awareness among new drivers, especially teen drivers, on their obligations towards our most vulnerable road users. So anyway, yay, New Jersey. Big, big shout out to them. Last point of concern on my list of things I like to go through is the maintenance minute. And the maintenance minute this week is cleaning off that bike after a warm weather break in winter. So some of us are up here in the cold zone, have experienced the balmy 30 degree and sometimes 40 degree temperatures that have come to greet us because we were dealing with sub-zero. You don't want to know. It's just not a good time to be out on your bike. It's not a good time to be outside in general. But anyway, we got a couple of little bursts. We got last weekend, we got up into the 40s. Wow. What do you know about that? I know if you're listening to me out in California or Arizona, because I know I have listeners out there, you're going, are you kidding me? I'd never go out in that weather. Well, you know what? It's like a breath of fresh air for us. So people are getting out. It almost smells like spring out there. It's great. You go out to ride your bike. It's been snowing, so we've got snow on the sides of the road. We have lots of salt and sand and all this disgusting stuff that they throw down on the roads to make them clean for us. We really don't want to ride our mountain bike because it's so muddy on the trails that you're just going to go out and do a lot of damage, and it's going to be like riding through, you know, mud. And so it's going to be a lot of work. So a lot of people go onto the roads. So what do when you get done? You come back and you need to clean the bike off. First thing first, you want to try to wash the bike off. Number one thing that I am a big proponent of, and I really talk to people about this a lot, do not use a hose. Okay, here's why. Because the pressure of the hose, the amount of water pressure that goes in, could go into your bearings. You could cause yourself a lot of damage and a lot of expense later on. So please don't use a hose. Here's my method. My method is I go in the house, and I put my bike, I've got a rack outside of our slider door, and I go into the house and I get a warm bucket of water. And my favorite device to use is a very, very stiff, heavy paintbrush, because it can really get into places. Now, you have a couple of different sizes, and they can get into small areas, and you can get around the derailleurs and all that. And you just that and a little bit of warm soapy water works pretty good. And you just wash it off. Just wash off all the crud, all the stuff. You may have some ice on there because you might have really been pushing the limits and been out when it was a little below the freezing point. And you want to clean that off. So warm water works really good. And then have a good supply of dry rags and dry it off. Now, there are some people that are really into it and don't have a lot of concerns at home, and so they will actually bring it in, put it in the bathtub, and they'll rinse it off there. That is something you might either talk to the person you live with about, or, you know, possibly get some sort of permission there. I wouldn't encourage that because, you know, you're going to have to clean the tub afterwards. It's just going to make a big mess. Try to do it outside if you can. If you can't, maybe you want to bring it inside. Maybe you want to find another way to do it. Put a tarp down on the garage floor or the basement floor and then wash your bike off that way. Anyway, after that, you want to make sure you lube your bike really well. You want to use a good chain lube on there. Dry everything off real good. Use the chain lube. Always use the lube the day before you ride, not just before you ride. And you'll be ready to go for the next nice, lovely, warm day. So I have a guest that has just called in, and this week's guest is Don Walker from the North American Handbuilt Show, which is going to be in Hartford, Connecticut. And Don, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Can you hear me?
Oh, I can hear you just fine. Perfect.
Wonderful.
Good. Nice connection. Very good. So good. Don is involved with this show called the North American Handbuilt Show, and we have the pleasure of having this show in Hartford this year, which I don't know that it's ever been on the East Coast, not that I can remember. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, it's been on the East Coast twice, Richmond, Virginia, and I believe it was 2010, and 2014 it was in Charlotte, North Carolina. But we have not yet been to the New England area proper, and we're really, really excited to be there.
Well, we're excited to have you here. You know, the birth of the American bicycle was right here in Hartford, Connecticut. So that's kind of a big deal for us. And so there's some history that goes along with this, which is really, really cool. And anyway, so we're excited to have you. I'm gonna put this on a pause for a second here, and I'm going to go back to a question that I ask every guest who comes on my show, and that is, and I think I briefed you on this, so you probably are prepared, but that question is, what is the very first experience you can remember with a bicycle?
That I can remember would be the day that I got my training wheels off.
Yay.
My dad was running, you know, kind of trotting behind me, holding me up by the seat, you know, and making sure that I wasn't tipping over. And he's like, you're doing good, you're doing good, you're doing good. And then I didn't hear you're doing good anymore because he had stopped running. And I went around the corner and I don't know, I probably got 100 yards from the house or so, and then I decided that I had to turn around to go back towards my own home, and did a little too sharp of a turn and wiped out and scraped my knee and my elbow and cried, and, you know, it's been a love affair ever since.
Yeah, aww. I know. Isn't that something? You got an awe from Fran on that. You know, it's... So many people have had this experience. The dad or mom running along the side of the bike thing is such a strong memory, and with so many people, it's funny how that comes out that way. But I had a similar experience with my dad, and he let go, and I rode the bike off the driveway into the woods. But you know, that's and you know, did the initial crash as you did, and then from that point, it's love forever.
That's it.
Yeah, that's it. So obviously, you are a bike guy. We know that much. You are really into this. You have a history with bikes. But I'm gonna go back now to, I'd like to talk a little bit more about the show, which is coming here, the Handbuilt Show, which is coming in Hartford. So we're looking at the 16th, 17th, and 18th of February. Why don't you give me a little history on the show?
Sure. The show kind of formed out of an online forum. It was the frame builders at fred.org, but the Fred was spelled P-H-R-E-D. And it was, you know, back in the early 2000s, there was a lot of new guys coming up, a lot of hobbyists on the forum, and a lot of the established builders you know, we're there and, you know, kind of giving advice. No, this isn't what I would do. This, you know, you want to change that. You'll want to do this. You know, we're giving a lot of advice to the young guys and the newbies coming up. And, you know, I don't recall who it was that said, you know, we really need to have a get together. Couldn't figure out, you know, how to make it all happen at once. And, you know, we just kind of kept on talking about it, and, you know, finally I just kind of grabbed the reins and said, you know what, I'm going to do it, and this is what's going to happen. So I was at the time living in the Waco, Texas area, and I said, you know, a good central location that's easy to get to would be Houston, so let's make it happen. And from that online forum, you know, we ended up having about 23 or 25 exhibitors. And surprisingly, for the entire weekend, we had between 600 and 700 attendees.
Very, very nice. So I was looking at your attendee list, and it's mind blowing. You have a lot of people coming to this show this year, and
the exhibitor list really it's like a who's who in cycling.
Yes, it is. I see people from, the standard people from the industry, like the Shimanos and such. But then I just see an incredible number of builders. And it's like, you almost didn't realize that any of this many people existed. Now, I go way back to the days of, actually go all the way back to Whitcomb USA. Do you know that at all?
I remember them.
Okay. They were owned by a company that was called Sports East out of East Haddam, Connecticut. And they sent over a couple of young prospective builders to the Whitcomb factory in England to learn how to build bicycle frames. And those two builders were Richie Sachs and Peter Weigel.
Yep.
Yeah. So that's my history. And that's how far back I go. And now you know how old I am. So... But and then of course out of that became there more people ended up showing up there. I believe Chris Chance had a short time of existence at the Whitcomb factory also building mm-hmm. building area, and then that kind of all fell apart, and then they went off their own ways, and the rest is history, and they're all still around, which is really kind of interesting. So
yeah, absolutely. As a matter of fact, Peter Weigel just kind of signed up. I don't want to say last minute because we still have a few booths left, but he did sign up earlier this week, and I'm really excited because I haven't seen Peter's stuff in quite a few years at the show, and he's always been one of my favorites as far as style and just quality. And aesthetic. I mean, that guy is just an incredible builder.
He is an amazing builder, and he's a great talker too.
He's a wonderful human being, and you gotta like that in a person. You do.
Yeah. No, I love Peter, and Peter is, I've known him for a really long time. I used to paint his bikes, so I go back
in the. There.
Yeah, there's a connection. I painted for both Peter and for Richie Sachs back in the late 70s, early 80s. So I painted for a couple of years in the basement of my bike shop. Probably not really legally, but I did do that. And
I didn't hear nothing.
Well, now it's recorded, so here we go. But that's all right. You can't chase me down from all the way back then, so I'm not going to worry about it too much. But I was painting bicycles. Peter actually taught me how to do it. And because he was looking for a painter and he was, tearing his hair out and didn't have enough time to be painting the bicycles and building the bike. So I became his painter. And then Richie found out about it and said, can you paint my bikes too? And so the next thing you know, I was doing both of them, which was pretty cool because you get to see the bike in the raw. You get to see it before it actually has anything over the top of it, and you get to look at the lugs and the beauty of the work and the craftsmanship. And boy, there's a lot that goes into building a bike frame, isn't there?
Absolutely, and that's kind of the mind blowing thing is how much labor actually goes into it. It's very labor intensive. There's a lot of details, a lot of small things that you might not pick up on. The average builder, can get a bike done in between, 15 and 25 hours, depending on the complexity of the bike. But the more, can take up to, 40, 50, 60 hours.
Wow. Wow. It's amazing. Wait until you see, have you seen any of the bikes that Peter's been building lately?
Yeah. His Randon Earring stuff is absolutely stunning.
It's going to blow you away. I mean, it's just incredible what he's doing. That man and attention to detail. I don't know what to say about it, but he's just like, I'm looking at what he's doing, and it's just, it's crazy, crazy stuff.
To continue on that subject just a little bit, excuse me. I was in Japan a few years ago. Excuse me. I'm not sure what happened there.
That's all right.
and I had been by the Toei shop.
Mm-hmm.
And Toei is synonymous with Rand and Uring worldwide.
Oh, okay.
And I had seen, you know, their bikes in production. I had met their head builder, and he was a grumpy old guy. I mean, he truly was grumpy. And, you know, I'd ask if I could take a picture of him working. He's like, no, please don't. You know, and it's like, okay, well, you mind if I take pictures of the bike? So, yeah, that's fine. He just didn't want to be in any of the pictures.
Oh, really?
But, yeah. The second builder, you know, was, probably 10 years younger than the older guy. And he was, you know, a quality builder as well, but he didn't mind being in it. But at any rate, I had seen their work, and I've seen Peter's work.
Mm-hmm.
And I was discussing with a journalist from Japan, and I was like, you know what? I think Peter Weigel makes the best Rand and Uring bike on planet Earth right now.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And the journalist is like, no, it's Toei. And I go, no, really? You have got to see the attention to detail Peter's doing. Toei's bikes, they're doing, the two builders were doing about 20 bikes a week.
Wow. Yeah, how do you do that?
I know. It's an incredible, incredible workload to be doing that many bikes. But they were so efficient and just really, really good at what they did. But, you know, Peter, you know, I think his attention to detail, his quality, his brazing, I think all of those are head and shoulders above what everybody seems to think is the best Rand and Uring bike on planet Earth. I just think Peter's that much better.
Well, I hope Peter's listening here because, you know, I have a shout out to him too because, you know, I painted a lot of bikes. When I was doing the bike painting thing, I was also painting everyone else's bike too because people say, oh, I need a repaint. Can you do my bike? And it was, you know, you had to find the decals and do all that. But I was doing a lot of repaints on a lot of different brands of bicycles, a lot of stock bikes that were coming into the U.S., bikes coming in from Italy, some coming in from France. And to look at one of Peter's bikes in the raw versus these other bicycles in the raw, it was just unbelievable. There was a night and day difference between what else was out there and what he was doing. And you know, he and Richard were just in a class by themselves. They were very, very different. Now, I'm sure if I had a chance to have seen one of Ben Serrata's bikes, I'm sure that we probably would have been able to, you know, say the same thing. I know they put out a lot of bicycles over the years. I have seen some of Chris Chance's work in the raw because I used to go up to Boston and visit him when he was up there. So, you know, it's just fascinating to see this. So, what can I expect to see at the show?
Everything. You'll see anything from bamboo, hardwood bicycles. You'll see titanium, steel. I'm sure there's going to be some stainless steel there. And believe it or not, there's even some handmade carbon fiber bikes.
Yeah.
So people aren't, you know, understanding what, you know, constitutes a handmade, you know, carbon fiber bike. It's, you know, it's tube to tube construction, and then wrapped over that with a carbon fiber, and it gives a smooth, seamless look like, you know, you would expect.
Right.
It looks like, you know, perfection. It looks like, you know, absolute, you know, attention to detail like you would see on, you know, one of Peter's bikes or whatever. It's, you know, just super, super high quality stuff that you just can't imagine, you know, how labor intensive it is. And
right.
That's what it is.
That's incredible. So as a consumer, if I'm coming to this or just an enthusiast and I'm coming to the show, I'm going to ask a couple of questions here, one of which I think I pretty much know the answer to, but I'll ask it anyway for the sake of the interview, and that is, can I test ride anything?
We don't necessarily do test rides during show hours. If a builder has something that's in your size and you are a very serious customer, it is possible that they can work with you outside of show hours. But typically speaking, this is more of a museum type venue.
And it is, it's like going to a jewelry store. I mean, it's really like, yeah. I've been trying to explain this to my friends because I'm so excited about the show coming here, and I've been promoting it now for probably the last month and a half on my show. At the end of the show, I mention it because I'm just so excited that it's going to come here. And I talked to one of my friends this morning. I also teach a morning fitness class, a spin class at 5:45 in the morning. And I spoke to one of my friends there and said, so are you going to go to the show? And he goes, I don't know if I can. And I said, oh, I'm sorry. Are you going to be out of town? He goes, no. He said, I don't know if I can restrain myself if I go there. So he said, it sounds like it might be a very expensive visit for me. So
well, you got to get permission from your significant other.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the time, they'll tell you to leave the checkbook at home.
Mm-hmm.
But the good news is a lot of these guys will take PayPal or, credit cards. So,
Fran's giving me she's giving me the off. Why would anyone do that? See, now, this is why it's very important to be involved with a fellow bicycle nut.
I'm the one with the checkbook.
Well, you got to remember, the perfect amount of bikes is always N plus one.
That's right. So. Absolutely.
I know. I got no problem with that.
Yeah.
I got that going on, too.
I found the right girl here. I totally found the right girl. Yeah.
Well done, sir.
Yeah. Well, it's important. We have our house may always be kind of a mess and look like a couple of bike racers live there because we have bike clothes strewn all over the place and bicycles everywhere. But we're happy.
What's wrong with that?
Well, there you go. Well, let me reverse interview you for a second. So how many bikes do you have?
I don't have as many as you would think. I really don't. I have a hand-built frame. I do have a bike that is a hand-built frame. And I do have, which is steel. And I have a steel cyclocross bike, which is essentially a stock bike. It's a Ritchie Swiss Cross. And because, why would you ride a cross bike that's not steel? I just don't understand. Anyway, you can see that there's a tendency for me to like that material over some of the other materials. And I do own a carbon bicycle. I'm in the bicycle industry, and I have opportunity to have one, usually from a company I am working for or have been working for. So I do own a nice carbon fiber bicycle also. That's pretty much it. I don't really have anything else. I'm not a big keeper of bicycles. I kind of feel like if I don't have time to ride them, then I shouldn't have them. And there are other people that can do that, and that's fine. So unlike many people my age who have been around bikes all their years and kept their original racing bike and all that, wish I'd done that. Really wish I'd done that. But I don't have that many. I just have three bikes, three purposes. Mm. And as far as a mountain bike goes, I have a cross bike. What do you need a mountain bike for?
There you go.
There you go. I am an opinionated old fart. That's me. So, and people know that. So how many bikes do you have?
Oh, over 20.
Boy.
The thing about being a frame builder is I can always build myself a new one whenever I want.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's true.
I have that going for me, but, every frame builder also has a favorite frame builder.
And
mine just happens to be De La Santa.
Oh, no kidding, really. The old Greg LeMond builder back in the days. Yeah.
Yep. Roland is a treasure to this industry. He really is. He's one of the most unique and humorous people you could ever meet. He's got stories of cycling folklore, dating back to the 60s. In the Northern California, Nevada area.
Right.
And, he's got stories of, when he had a small team, they were going to do the tour of Mexico, and Gary Fisher was on his team.
Oh, boy.
Oh, and Gary Fisher, you know, was I think 18 or 19 or something like that, and had long hair, and then he kept in a ponytail that was, you know, like long down to his butt.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the story that Roland tells about them trying to get across the border into Mexico to go do this bike race, the Federales wouldn't let Gary Fisher in because of his long hair. They didn't want any hippies in Mexico.
Oh, my God, really?
And just the way that Roland tells the story, you're just laughing. You're in stitches.
Oh, I would love to meet this man.
Oh, yeah, Roland is, like I said, one of the most entertaining people you will meet in the bicycle industry.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, he's not going to be here this year. It's too far for him to travel, you know, being from Reno.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I probably shouldn't, you know, tell people this, but he has gout.
Oh, that's sad.
He's been dealing with it for about 2 or 3 years now, and it's... it's hard on him to travel, so, you know.
He should talk to my better half here, and she can help him with that.
Gout hurts, yeah.
Fran is a naturopathic physician, so she helps a lot of people with a lot of things.
Yeah. No purines for you. Tell that dude that beer is not his friend.
Yeah.
I'll be sure to let him know next time I talk to him.
Yeah. Well, that would be cool. But there's going to be some other people there at the show that are going to be very entertaining and interesting to meet, too, I'm sure.
Oh, absolutely. Right off the top of my head, Eric Noren from Peacock Groove.
Okay. I am not aware of him.
He is like probably the younger, more outrageous version of Roland Delasana.
Oh, really?
He does a lot of concept bikes. If you look him up online, he did a Evil Dead bike because he's in his I think mid-40s, and he kind of grew up on the 80s horror movies and stuff like that. And if you're into that at all, who doesn't like Bruce Campbell? The guy, the guy was everywhere for horror movies there for a little while with that Evil Dead franchise. And Eric did an Evil Dead bike. He's done a Highlander bike. Prince Purple Rain tribute bike.
I remember seeing that. Okay, I know who this guy is. Sure.
Yeah, that was actually the best show for the show last year was the Purple Rain bike.
Wow.
So it was, the attention to detail, like the water bottle bosses, they had reinforcements that looked like, the Prince symbol, there was all kinds of details on it. So he's an interesting person to talk to, very entertaining, very animated. So I think people would enjoy talking to him.
Okay.
Let's see. I'm just trying to go through my let's see. Don Ferris of Anvil Bike Works. He doesn't really build many frames anymore, but he builds all the tooling for frame building. And Don is actually a retired Army Ranger. And had spent, I believe, 8 years at Ice Station Zero at the South Pole.
Whoa.
So
there's some stories right there.
He's got some amazing stories.
Mm-hmm.
Just incredible life experiences and just a really, really highly intelligent man that could probably kill you with a toothpick 26 different ways.
Oh, God.
If pressed. But... thank goodness he's, mellowed out in his old age. But, he's a really, really, great individual. And like I said, very entertaining as well. So, this industry, frame building especially, is full of some really, really interesting people.
Yes.
It's been said that, frame builders couldn't get a job anywhere else. Because we're also independent and set in our own kind of, way of thinking. So
that statement can fall into a lot of the rest of the bicycle industry too. So I will say that, you know, I've been in the bicycle industry for 43 years, and so I have some history. I can tell you that there are a lot of characters in this industry.
Yes, that there really is. There truly is.
Yeah, and the key component, I believe, is independence. And I think that relates to the bicycle, because the bicycle is the independent form of transportation. It's the first thing you get yourself on when you're young and a child that allows you the freedom to transport yourself wherever you want to go.
Yeah, exactly. And that, for me, as you know, an early teen was to the video arcade.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, for me it was to get to my friend's house, which was across the town, and the best way to get there was by my bicycle. Or when my dad needed help at work, because he worked for himself, he would call me up and I would have to ride my bicycle there. So that's kind of, you know, that's how I was able to do that. And, you know, we didn't have mom and the SUV and the minivan and all that back in my day. We had our bicycles, so.
Yeah.
So that's it. So is it going to be just bikes at the bike show?
No, there's a lot of component manufacturers. Mm-hmm. There's a clothing or manufacturer or two that, you know, does custom clothing. There's we've got a sock maker there. I'm trying to think of what else. You know, we've got some of the local not-for-profits. CCAP will be there, the Connecticut.
I know them well. Yeah,
you know them well. Okay.
Oh, I do. Absolutely. Yeah.
The Connecticut Cycling Advancement Program. We'll have, I believe, don't quote me on this because I don't have the exhibitor list in front of me, but I believe the University of Connecticut cycling team will be there.
Oh, is that right? No
well.
Kidding.
Yeah, UConn.
Oh, good. Well, that's where we're broadcasting out of. Do you know that?
Oh, no, I didn't know that. Great.
Yeah, I'm wonderful. Sitting right in the middle of the University of Connecticut right now. I'm in the student union in their radio station. So,
okay,
yeah,
great.
So I'll touch base with those guys because we've been talking about putting a bike race on, and we've been going back and forth with emails and all. So that'll be nice to see.
You know what would be cool,
mm-hmm.
That you could do a bike race indoors is like roller races. If anybody's
yes.
got the old rollers with a big dial,
oh.
you know, that could be a lot of fun to watch.
Do you know anybody who has any of those still?
I know one guy that has them here in Kentucky, southern Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
I would have to talk to him and see if he'd be interested in loaning them. But
what
yeah, that's
a cool
the only
thing.
Set that I know of. The last time I saw a set of those was when I was a junior in California, and we had roller races at the local mall.
That's what we used to do. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the last time I saw a set of those was also back in the 70s, and we had roller races at a local mall, and I actually won. I won the whole
nice.
Thing. Yeah, because
nice.
I can spin really, really fast, because that's the secret to winning a roller race is you've got to be able to spin a big gear really, really fast.
You know, the best saying that I've ever heard about that was from Roland Delasana. You can't win big races if you can't spin big gears.
Yay, I like that. Well, we have a gentleman back here who has been a multi-time national champion, and he is now in his 70s, and he's from New Jersey. And his proclamation is, the rider who spins the fastest is the fastest.
There you go.
Yeah.
I like that one too. I might have to borrow that one.
Yeah, no, I use it all the time. I quote it all the time because it's so true. It's so true. Two riders, same gear, same limitations. The one who spins faster wins.
That's right.
So that's it. So it's not going to be just bikes. We're going to have some other things there. I think also my friends from the Bike Walk Connecticut are going to be there. I think you're going to have those. I thought I saw them on your list. I was looking over your list here. The list is impressive, by the way. I'm astounded by the number of people that are showing up. And they're not just from the United States either, by the looks of things.
No, we've got frame builders from Korea, Japan, a few from Italy.
Mm-hmm.
We've got exhibitors from England and Germany. So they're coming from all over the place. So it's quite the international affair.
Yeah, it's very, very cool. I'm just really, really impressed by this. I saw a couple that were listed here from Russia that are coming in also.
Yeah, actually, there is, I believe, Taurus Velo and Bjorn. Mm-hmm. And then just on Monday, Triton signed up.
I see that.
Now,
yeah.
Now speaking of characters in this industry, Dimitri from Triton is probably the biggest character there is.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's about 6'4", 6'5". Mm-hmm. Kind of a looming figure.
Easy to find.
But he is so comical and so funny. And, you know, he does pretty well with English. So, I mean, things aren't lost on him. I mean, you could, you know, kind of give him an English joke and he'll get it and run with it and everything. But he really is just an interesting character. And he always brings... or has for the last 2 years at the show that he's been to. He brings, you know, those Russian army hats that, you know, the big wool ones with the flaps that come down over your ears?
Yeah, yeah.
He's got ton of surplus of those, and he's, you know, got his logo on the front of them.
Mm-hmm.
And, he, you know, there's something that he, you know, he sells at the show.
Oh, nice.
I think they might only be $25, and it's like, seriously, if you live in a place there's winter, it's the best $25 you can ever spend.
Well, we have winter here, and I'm hoping that you guys don't experience it when you're up here, but we have been known to be in single numbers in February up here, too, so it could happen. We've also been known to have blizzards at that same time of year, so we're kind of open against all that. You know, you never know.
You know, yeah, we you know, I'm fine with single digits. I'm fine with snow. You know, a nor'easter is not going to be good.
Never is.
You know, but, you know, I've been studying the weather pattern, you know, in New England for about the last 5-6 years since I've been trying to get up there. And it seems like all the really bad storms are coming in later in March and early April. That's what it's been looking like to me.
That's been normal the last couple of years. Yeah, we've had, we've had that. And, of course, this year it completely got blown away because we got winter to come very early this year as far as, and although even last year we had the Cross Nationals in Hartford and, you know, we had snow, like a pretty good sized snowstorm. We had some really, really cold temperatures and that was early January. And we just went through that this year in late December, early January. We had some brutally cold weather. I think we saw like 15 below here at one point.
Yeah, yeah.
That was cold.
I'm here in Louisville, and we had, you know, 5 below for a few nights as well.
So, wow. It can get to 5 below in Louisville?
Yeah. That, a few years back when we had that polar vortex thing that they were talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah, and instead of the boom cyclone.
Yeah, right, right.
the polar vortex, our highs were 0, and it was up to minus, I think, 12, minus 15, you know, as the lows. And it stayed that way for at least 5 days.
So I have to relate this to you because, you know, working in the bicycle industry, we have a lot of people that are based out of California. And that's kind of a central part of the industry is based in California. So there's a lot of companies out there that are in California. And, of course, if you're a sales rep in the bike industry, as I am, you get the phone call in January and they go, hey, Ron, what's going on? How's your numbers? You're looking a little soft there. Are you out? Are you working? You know, and then I'll explain to them that, well, it got up to 5 today. And they go, 5? I say, 5 degrees above 0. And they're like, oh, my God, you know, and they can't believe it. So here's my explanation for those who don't understand this. And this is for all you folks that are out on the West Coast that are listening to me today on this podcast or show. And that is that I used to tell my inside sales reps when they would ask me what 5 degrees was all about, I'd say, when you go home tonight, I want you to empty all the food out of your freezer. I want you to crawl inside and close the door. And it's warmer in there than it is out here today.
That's a reality check right there.
That is a reality check. Yeah, that's just really, 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 really cold. So Don, you're a builder as well as obviously very in charge of the show too at the same time. How long you been building bikes?
I think I'm in year number 27 now.
Wow.
I originally started in 1990. It was late 90, early 91 is when we, you know, say that it actually started happening for me. I had a few years off in the middle, and then got back into it and been steady ever since.
What brought you there?
In the building, I was racing at the time in Southern California. I was young and I was married and starting a family, and I knew that there was no way I was going to be able to train, you know, with a young child in the house. The amount of hours that I'd need to be competitive as a Cat 2. And, you know, it's like, well, you know, I was an aircraft mechanic by trade and thought to myself, you know, I'd like to stick with a sport in some way, shape, or form. And frame building just seemed like the natural progression for me to go to. So
wow, that's a big step. That's a big risk to take.
Yeah. Hmm. It's been worthwhile.
Yeah.
I've met and made some amazing friends throughout the years, all because of bicycles.
There is nothing like the bicycle industry and the people that ride bicycles. I don't know how to explain it to anyone when they ask me, you know, why I've been doing this for so long. And it's just, they're just great people in the bike industry and people that ride bikes. It's just it's a cool thing. So obviously you have the same love affair with this as I have. And I completely understand so I'm going to ask a crazy question that I of course know the answer to, but I want our listeners to hear this, and that is, why do I need a hand-built bike?
Well, you know, not everybody does. I'll be frank about that. But if you care about what you buy, if you like the finer things in life, if you maybe have an odd sized body and something off the rack doesn't work for you, you know, those are the cases, you know, that really would like a handmade bike. I specialize in, you know, racing bikes for, you know, track and cyclocross, you know, some road. And ever since I got into that, I have somehow been, you know, putting my bikes under faster people, and the ones that were, you know, I guess newer racers felt their development, you know, while on my bikes skyrocket. So they might have been a pack finisher before, but I, you know, for whatever reason, the tubing choice or whatever, the fit, you know, everything that, you know, I had associated with them and made that bicycle for them, they were able to increase their performance. So something I'm doing with efficiencies and whatever seems to work. So people that are looking for higher performance could benefit from a handmade bike.
Mm-hmm.
So not everybody needs one, but
right.
You know, it's something, you know, something of a luxury for some, and something that, you know, might be mandatory for others based on their, you know, a body type that, you know, just doesn't fit a normal bike.
I have one of those body types. I understand. I'm 5'8" with a 34-inch inseam.
Ah.
Yeah, see?
You have long arms as well?
Oh, boy, do I ever.
Okay.
Yeah, really long arms, really long legs, and no torso whatsoever. So, which is
so you
great.
Got a short top tube and a long stem.
I've got the short top tube, and as I've gotten older, the stem is getting shorter too.
Gotcha.
because my flexibility isn't what it used to be when I was back when I was a young pup racing bikes. So you know, back in the days when I was racing my bike, I had Chinelli number 66s with a deep drop on them, and you all the stuff that ever was really popular at the time. And boy, I would not be able to sit on that bike comfortably ever again, because I've gotten older and I've got a little stiffer than I was when I was younger. So you talk about different bikes for different people, and how, you know, when you're custom making a bike, you can choose different tubing for different things. So, you know, I know that, like, you get your bigger riders and sometimes they need a little bit more reinforcement, so maybe you put a different type of down tube on the bike to decrease the flexibility in the bottom bracket. Do you do all this kind of stuff when you're building a bike?
Oh yeah, yeah. I myself, when I look at a rider, you know, I typically prefer to see a rider that I'm going to be working with ride a bike prior to me, you know, designing or building the bike. I want to see how they, you know, look on the bike. I want to see their posture. I want to see their flexibility. I want to see, you know, how they do in certain sections of handling. I want to see, you know, where they are for power, and where they are for spin, and just, you know, I just want to really examine the rider, and then I can kind of pick and choose from a multitude of tubes, you know, and for big, strong track racers, you know, I want to know how much, you know, when they are in the gym, are they squatting, are they leg pressing, if so, how much, because I, like I said, I pick and choose. There's a multitude of tubes from, you know, several different manufacturers, different diameters, different gauges, and I can pick and choose, you know, from all of those to make up what I think is the best, most efficient, best-fitting bike for them. And that's, you know, that's what I like to do. It's an alchemy of sorts, you know, picking this tube here and this tube there, and, you know, I think, you know, he's... Say he's a gear masher. Well, you know, he's going to need a little stronger chainstays than if somebody's really light on the pedals and has a higher cadence.
Right. You know, exactly.
So you want the efficiencies there. So, you know, when it comes down to it, you know, if all things are equal, like you said, you know, it's not just the fastest spin. You know, in my mind, it could be, you know, the fastest spin. Plus the stiffest bottom bracket across the line first.
Sure.
You know?
Sure.
So there's always just a little bit, if I can engineer some sort of mechanical advantage into that bike, you know, that's what I'm going to do.
There's so much more to it than people realize. You know, Don, this is great. This has been really cool talking with you, and we're starting to run out of time here. But I've been talking to my guest today has been Don Walker, who is with the American Handbuilt Show here, the North American Handbuilt Show, which is going to be in Hartford, Connecticut. And it's going to be here from the 16th of February on through the 18th of February. And it will be at the Convention Center in Hartford, Connecticut. And anyway, Don is also has been very, very friendly in talking with us all about lots of aspects of being a custom builder. If you want to know more about Don, you can go to www.donwalkercycles.com and you can check out some of the cool stuff he does. And you can put a little bit more of an idea to what it is that we have been talking about here today. You will also see that there are a number of people that are signed up to be at this show, and I highly recommend people coming out and seeing this. This is something that we don't get in our town very often, similar to having the Cross Nationals here last year. We don't always get these wonderful events. And this is the North American Handbuilt Show. And you can visit that at www.nahbs.com. And the North American Handmade Bicycle Show is the world's largest show for custom-built bicycles. And it's taking place in Hartford, Connecticut, February 16th through the 18th at the Connecticut Convention Center. It's a three-day event, which changes venues every year. And this year, we're fortunate enough to have it here. And it's been around for 14 years, according to this. It's really cool. Don,
14 years.
Yeah.
Longest I've ever had a job.
There you go. I can't even begin to tell you how wonderful it was to have you on the show here today. I can't wait to meet you in person. And I will be at the show because you guys have been kind enough to give me press credentials so I can come in. I plan on doing some interviewing and recording out there. And if I could bring my lovely assistant, Fran, with me, too, it'd be really cool. But we'll talk about that offline. And I
think we know people that can make that happen. But
you know,
it's been my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it. It's the time has gone by way too fast.
Yeah, I know. That's why we need more time for this. But you know what?
Really
we'll do it again. We'll do it again.
Okay.
Let's meet in Hartford. We'll chat. We'll have some fun. Maybe grab a drink or something if you're one of those. And we can move on from there.
Sounds great. We'll see you in about 3 weeks or so.
Thank you very much, Don. Thanks.
All right, thanks, Ron. Have a great day.
All right, you too. So that was Don Walker from the North American Handmade Bicycle Show, which is going to be in Hartford, Connecticut. Really exciting. Another thing that we have coming up, which I would like to recognize, is the National Bike Summit, which is March 5th through the 7th in Washington, D.C., and you can learn more about that by going to the League of American Bicyclists site at bikeleague.org/summit. And if you, you'll find that there's going to be speakers and sessions there. It's a premier bicycle advocacy event of the year, uniting the voices of the bicyclists on Capitol Hill. And this year's theme is Grassroots Grow Together. We'll be showcasing successes at the local level and learning how they happen and exploring ways to expand their reach. Peer learning is a critical component of growing and strengthening the bicycle movement. Together, they make our local, regional, and national working together to unify force of unstoppable change. So that would be the National Bike Summit on March 5th through the March 7th in Washington, D.C. Very important event. That and also our North American Handbuilt Show. Really exciting times here. It's going to be a real pleasure. I will be out at the Handbuilt Show, so please come by and see me. You'll see me wandering around. I'll have a microphone. I'd love to hear your thoughts and record them. Hopefully, I will be doing a daily short cast on each of the days and people that we have at the show. My name is Pedlin Ron, and you have been listening to Bicycle Talk with my co-host Fran Storch, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. You can always send me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com, and you can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. If you'd like to contribute to or be on the show as a guest, please contact me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. This is Pedlin Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS, Storrs.